This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass. And who have we got, Tass?
Macca, we've got a full studio this morning. We've just been chatting with the Lord Mayor, Sally Capp, for the last half hour or so. And joining us is Gabrielle Williams, who's the new Victorian Minister for Women's Affairs, Family Violence and Young People. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Great to have you in the studio.
Oh, thank you for having me in the studio.
And can I just say congratulations?
Thank you.
The last time you were in the studio, you were not just a mere parliamentary secretary, but you've been promoted since then.
You were tempted to say lowly, weren't you?
No. I think parliamentary secretaries have a very vital role.
They do.
In fact, if you look at our current Victorian Premier, he used to be Parliamentary Secretary for Health.
He did.
Yes.
He did.
There you go.
No, he has very strong feelings about the health sector still to this day. I think it's close to his heart from that history.
He does. In fact, I happened to see him out at Maroondah Hospital during the week, and he was talking about clinical trials and research initiatives and care plans and all sorts
of passion.
Things. Yeah, no doubt about it. So thank you for joining us this morning. We're keen to have a chat about women in politics.
Fantastic.
And I thought, two women politicians in the office, so we thought, what a great topic.
Absolutely.
So who wants
no better
to make,
company to be with?
Who wants to make an opening comment first?
Well, and I just said earlier, actually, my next meeting is with Leckie Ord, who was the first female Lord Mayor of Melbourne, and we're going for a walk around Westgate Park, which is something near and dear to her heart here in the city of Melbourne. But I think we are seeing an increase, which is fantastic, because politics is really about representing our community and building that diversity in is just so important.
Absolutely. Reflecting the community. It's a simple concept.
How good does it feel, Gabrielle, to be a member of Cabinet where 50% of the Cabinet are women?
It's fantastic. It's particularly good to be the Minister for Women in the first ever Cabinet that comprises 50%.
But shouldn't
women.
It just be normal, though?
It should be normal. We expect people to be surprised or to celebrate it, but I think it's been a long time coming. And we should celebrate it because it's arrived, and that's good. But it's taken arguably far too long to get to this point.
I agree. I mean, I always reflect on what Justin Trudeau said about his cabinet when he was queried about its composition. And he said, well, it's actually, the modern world. It's, whatever it was, 2018 or 2017, when he appointed a very diverse cabinet.
Mm. We've still got quite a bit of work to do, though, to encourage more people to stand up for politics. It certainly wasn't something that was on my list of things to do, I must say, 12 months ago. But here I am, and I absolutely love it. And I'm one of those people like a converted smoker, or, where you become an evangelist.
Reformed.
And really a big champion for encouraging people to get involved. And it's amazing when I go into different forums and the number of people that come up to me afterwards and say, wow, maybe I could be
in
politics as well. And I've actually added into our citizenship ceremonies where we have, let's say, normally we have about 110 people. Usually they represent about 30 different countries that they've come from. And I've added in a line in there that says, now that you're an Australian citizen, you too could be Lord Mayor one day, just to encourage them to get involved in our political system.
It's the whole concept of you've got to see it to be it. And I think that applies on gender grounds, but on all sort of intersectional grounds, whether that be, ethnicity, sexuality, gender, you name it. We should be reflecting at all levels of leadership the community that we're ultimately here to serve and represent. So I think
should Labor be successful in the federal election, the cabinet will be 50%.
That's right.
And that, that's one of the examples of where all those years ago when the Labor Party set quotas and a lot of politicians on other sides of the fence were against it, I've always said to them, well, you need a quota. How about you have a quota of 50% men?
Wow, I like the way you think.
Yeah.
But look, with any change management program, and that's what we're talking about, you set targets and you set goals and then you work towards them, and that's really what we're talking about.
Mm. It's a cultural change.
It is.
Yeah. So, Gabrielle, from your point of view, what are some of the challenges that women experience in politics, in modern politics?
Well, I think there's some of the challenges that are reflected in more broadly trying to attract women to leadership positions. You know, men tend to freely put their hands up more proactively than women do. Women stand back. I mean, we've all heard those stories about women being more reluctant to ask for a pay rise, irrespective of how much they deserve it, whereas men are more likely to put their hand up for the pay rise even if they don't deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, all those sort of the contrasts. And, you know, it's when you're working your way up through the ranks and it's still very male-dominated, you're sort of vying to have your voice heard among all of these hands going up all of the time and quite loud voices. And it can be sometimes hard to navigate that process and how to put your hand up in a way that is comfortable for you too. I mean, you don't always want to have to do it the same way that men do it.
Yeah.
You've got to sort of find your own voice and your own way of asserting yourself.
Do you think we're at the point, both you, I'd like you to answer, is where a woman wants to, you know, stand as Lord Mayor or stand for a parliamentary seat or stand for a council seat, where that person or that how can I phrase it, that gender... Do you think that people now believe and accept that that's the normal course of events, or is there still some distance to travel where I think this is the way it should be? Are we at the point, or are we approaching the point where it's the normal state of affairs where people shouldn't actually be thinking, oh, well, that's a woman standing for that, as opposed to, oh, you know, that guy, you know...
I think the fact that we're still trailing so significantly would say that we're not there yet. That, you know, whether it be in women's representation in leadership roles, gender pay gaps, although, you know, the fact that, you know, women are still disproportionately victims of violence. All of those statistics tell us that we still have big cultural challenges to overcome.
I suppose what I mean is that, you know, younger women, I think, are much more prepared, you know, do you say, to stand up in that group where all the guys are putting their hands up for different things, but to actually say, I'm putting myself forward and I'm not actually feeling held back by that. That's what I look forward to, where it actually just becomes...
Natural.
The natural way, because... But all those issues that we need to address, you know, domestic violence, and one issue that we're keen to follow up on, which we spoke some time ago, a long time ago, with Fiona Richardson, was same-sex domestic violence and some of the challenges for our community. It's underreported.
Absolutely.
People don't want to talk about domestic violence anyway, but let alone in this area.
Mm.
But violence against women, we've had a number of guests recently where we've talked about this. This is where the evidence helps to inform. I don't understand. I actually just don't understand why people are violent, and particularly why men are so violent towards women. I don't understand it. I can't... Mm. I've tried many times to get my head around it, and a lot of reasons and justification given for it, but I still don't understand it. It just doesn't... No. It's not logical.
Well, no, I suppose if you're not a person that sees the world that way too, it's always going to be perplexing. But at the heart of it, and the Royal Commission was strong on this point, it's, you know, it's that notion of attitudes towards women having a direct impact on outcomes for women. And so when culturally we have inequality so ingrained and we have disrespect, it's fundamentally what it is, it's disrespect so culturally ingrained, then there'll always be elements to that that take it in a particularly extreme, violent direction.
It's not just physical violence.
No, it's...
You know, it's emotional violence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's verbal...
Financial violence.
Verbal violence. You know, and often when I watch Parliament, whether it's state or federal, I look at the verbal violence that is taking place there, and it's actually really offensive because it's not productive. It's demeaning. It's insulting. It's discriminatory.
Oh, and there's nothing worse than being in that cacophony of noise and then looking up and seeing a group of primary school age kids, faces looking at you, and you just think, oh.
And particularly the young girls. They're like,
yeah.
Oh, this is what I've got to look forward to.
Yeah, you know, if I and it's theatre.
Yeah,
the more insulting part of it for me is that it's theatre. The rest of the, you know, question time is filmed. It is, you know, it is a part of the day where the press are in the gallery to watch. So everybody's acting up to that. Mm. So it's quite deliberate theatre in that sense, in terms of just how verbal and sometimes sadly abusive it can be.
Yeah.
Which probably makes it slightly more offensive because you know that so much of the rest of the city day is not like that.
Yeah.
So it can be far more collegiate.
What are your thoughts, Sally? I mean, you know, robust debate I think is good, you know, but respectful, fact-based debate. But there's so much, you know, you would see this, some of, you know, anyone in a public position, you know, you know people make comment, people, you know, attack you for all sorts of reasons, yet they wouldn't do that in many cases if you're a man.
Hmm.
Why?
I don't know, but I keep coming back to that word that you've used, which is about respect, and we seem to have lost a bit of that in terms of certainly person to person, but also we're seeing that now with institutions as well. And how do we build that respect back up so that we do have a society where we can have those robust debates, because they're fabulous. That's about moving ideas to better.
Yeah. Mm.
But that
they're important.
But it doesn't have the personal sort of way in which people attack politicians and others these days, unfortunately, and social media, we've seen the way that those platforms work.
Yeah. And sorry, there was one
permission for people to be so.
But this is a great segue for me to come in and talk about my current fan, which is Jacinta Ardern, and what
you and so many others.
Yeah. I'm so in love with Jacinta.
She's coming to Melbourne.
Yeah, I'm dying to meet her. I've actually written to her and asked her to come on the show, but
drag her in, Sally. On
can we be there for that?
Yeah.
She hasn't agreed yet, but I'm trying.
We'll hand over the studio to the three of you.
Yeah.
For half an hour.
All right.
Yep.
You can
deal.
Talk about,
I reckon that could be a great conversation.
you can talk
but
about
what she talks about is kindness.
Yes.
It's not an unusual concept. It's a bit of an old-fashioned word, but it's actually a concept which really epitomises everything that we're talking about. If we can actually relate to each other in a kind way, it takes all that gumph out of the way, doesn't it?
You know, kindness doesn't cost you anything. I grew up.
Let's
hearing
start a movement.
That, you know,
yes.
There could certainly be a much more respectful debate. I mean, we saw it in recent times with the Taylor Harris stuff, going back to Sally's point about keyboard warriors. I mean, you look at an image that for any sort of normal thinking person, I'd like to think, well, you'd look at that and say the athleticism in that photo. You know,
oh, is this the footballer?
Yeah, it's the footballer, you know. And it's got that sort of, you know, it reminds you of that famous Teddy Whitten photo. And it's remarkable. Like, I just looked at her and thought, what an athlete.
Yeah.
And then to think that there was this sort of, you know, tribe of people that then turned it into something so horrible, so nasty, just so just disgusting, vitriolic and disgusting and,
horrible.
You know, horrible.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, that's sadly, these things keep happening. These incidents keep happening that remind us that we've still got some way to go.
Well, we've got to stay dedicated to that change.
Yeah.
And yesterday I actually spoke at a lunch that was Carlton in Business. It's hard for a Collingwood supporter to go into that environment.
Oh, you're a Collingwood supporter?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I knew I liked you for
Carlton,
a reason.
Carlton in Business, 1,200 people in a room, which is one of those big networking business lunches. And I was invited to speak, which was fantastic. And I really focused on the AFLW and the fact that that's creating new role models. I played footy in primary school and my role models were Billy Picken and Andrew Ireland, because that's all I knew in football. But my role models today, my role models today could be entirely different, and it's both for boys and girls. To have female role models is so important. But when we try to pull them down in that way, it's really scary. Yeah. But we are seeing change. And just being in that environment, when I was talking about AFLW and the work that Carlton does, which is a respect program that they run in schools, 1,200 people clapped at what's happening.
That's fantastic.
In football.
Yeah. Fantastic.
It was so wonderful to feel that in that audience of people saying, yeah, this is really fantastic and we are part of change.
Now, you were there.
Now, we are going to take a little
hang on,
break.
You were there with the new CEO of Virgin, weren't you?
I was. Paul Scurrah.
Yes.
He's ace.
And can I just say, Virgin did something this week that I think is absolutely about leadership.
Oh, yeah, the Brunei thing.
Yeah, following on from the...
We're talking more about that later.
You know,
yeah.
But the, what John Borghetti did at Virgin and Paul is following on. Staff travel and staff benefits, they've said, you know what, we don't want anything... We're not going to have anything to do with Royal Brunei Airlines. We're taking it off the list. Good on him. Good
now,
on him.
Before we take a little break, just 30 seconds each, what's your last message to young women who might be interested in a career in politics, a career in leadership roles?
Yeah, put your hand up. That's the starting point. So much comes after that. You know, you learn so much from the process itself. I think women have a tendency of thinking, particularly in politics, that they've got to know everything before they put their hand up, and that's when you're ready. Doesn't work that way. You put your hand up and then you learn.
Fantastic. Sally?
I would say the same. I'm a serial have-a-goer, which is, you know, putting your hand up. And when you do put your hand up, you learn a lot about yourself and others, as you said. But it's surprising how many people come in behind you to support you when
absolutely.
You do put your hand up. So it can seem very scary. But the fact is we just need more women to do that initial move and then we all pile in.
Fantastic. Sally, thank you for your time this morning. It's been great chatting with Sally and Gabrielle, but we've now got Gabrielle all to ourselves. So thank you for agreeing to stay
Gabrielle
on, Gabrielle.
Who?
Gabrielle Williams, the Victorian Minister for Women's Affairs, Family Violence and Youth Affairs.
Fantastic.
You're the member for Dandenong?
Dandenong.
Yeah, maybe I'll just call you that. Much easier.
It's a very long title. Yeah, you can go with Dandenong. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. So, Gabrielle, during the week you put out a statement announcing that you were creating a new framework of sorts, which was designed to guide government and government agencies in family violence work. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so the statement's called Everybody Matters, and it's an inclusion and equity statement, which essentially outlines the government's approach to intersectionality in family violence policy delivery and service delivery as well.
So I have to interrupt you.
What does that mean?
Intersectionality inclusion.
I know, it's such a buzzword. If anyone's playing, you know, kind of buzzword bingo, I think I've ticked off a few
it's
of them.
It's not the Office of Women's Affairs that are running rampant, is it?
No. So essentially what it is, and, there'll be many listeners who I imagine are familiar with this, but our mainstream service system, no shock to anyone, does not always cater for many voices in our community. We know that the LGBTIQ community is one that often feels marginalised in our mainstream services. And, you know, there are others as well, whether it be people from cold backgrounds, people of different faith backgrounds, language groups, etc. And so this was really about, and it's a world first, putting together a framework that steers the government into making sure that our services adequately meet the needs of intersectional communities, of communities of different people with different identity characteristics. And we know that all of us don't just have one.
Yes.
We have layers of identity characteristics. Yeah. And so having a service system that can be flexible and respond to those, that can make people feel included, can respond to their needs well, is really, should be, our ultimate goal.
So how does the statement work? What does that do?
It essentially sets a framework. It's been very heavily informed by voices from our intersectional communities about, setting it's basically a 10-year plan, a 10-year roadmap for how we work to making our services more inclusive. You know, in the family violence space, we've also seen on the back of the Royal Commission some quite targeted investment, particularly around the LGBTIQ communities, around making our services more inclusive, of making sure not just specialist services, but making sure our mainstream services are more inclusive.
So what would that look like? So for me as a gay man who turned up to a service, what would be different?
Well, in terms of what we've been supporting and funding over the last few years since the Royal Commission, it's things like rainbow tick accreditation, supporting service providers to have inclusive practice training, making sure that interface with people when they come in is more appropriate, is more welcoming, is more inclusive of their needs, and being able to recognise too when that's necessary. It's also you know, in that specific example, there's also been some really significant work being done to build the evidence base, because in the family violence space in particular, we know and that the rates of violence within the LGBTIQ communities are as high, if not in some communities higher, than the heterosexual population. But there is a data gap there. So it's actually committing to getting some clarity around that so we know what we're actually dealing with. And, you know, the service system in the family violence sector is really, really broad. I mean, we often, when we talk about services, think of health services, but it's housing, it's, you know, specialist family violence services, it's, you know, it is the health system as well. You know, it is a very, very broad sector of service delivery that we need to make sure is responding to the needs of all aspects of our community, so that no matter what your identity characteristics, you can turn up and you can get the help you need when you need it.
You know, one of the, as to how, you know, why you have a 10-year plan, sometimes this takes so long. I remember a discussion, might even be 10 years ago, when Ken Lay was police commissioner, having a discussion about the incidence of LGBTI family violence. And Ken said, look, I know what happens, but, you know, we don't have a handle on it. You know, so he started a piece of work at Victoria Police, which is, you know, continuing. There's still a lot of work to be done, but I reckon that's a decade ago. And how long it takes, and also having that discussion within our own community, you know, as Tass and I know, like, it's pretty difficult.
It's still highly stigmatised.
Violence
within our community is still highly stigmatised.
And people, no doubt, underreported. Absolutely.
So with this plan, how does it work? Is it mandatory? Do
It's a steering document. Like so many things we do in government, we set the tone. We set our expectations. We set the framework through which we will be working with services. We're trying to embed this in practice. I'd like to think that this is the start to doing this across government as a whole. That this is our kind of, you know, pilot or demonstration sector to do this in and say it can be done. This is how we've mapped a pathway to doing this. We've identified what needs to be done, what the failings are, where people's voices aren't being heard or their needs aren't being met. And now let's set ourselves the task of embedding this in our own service delivery and in the way government works with service providers too, to incentivise that.
How much resourcing is...
That was exactly where I was going to go, Macca.
Neville Wran always said, follow the money.
All good plans need to be resourced.
You know, what sort of a resource are we looking at here that the government's committing to?
Look,
this?
It's a longer term, in government terms, a longer term plan. 10 years is a longer term plan. So it's one of those things, you know, that we're already funding initiatives to target better service delivery for targeted communities. And, you know, I would expect that as time goes on throughout the work of this plan, that we would have sort of specific asks that would attach to that through budget cycles over time. So you're right, yes, it does require us to invest in certain initiatives, just in line with some of those initiatives I outlined in relation to the LGBTIQ communities in family violence space, you know, tangible assistance given to services to help them better meet the needs of a community so that, you know, you can turn up and you can get the help you need when you need it. It's simple concept, isn't it?
And, you know, people might and do feel uncomfortable about talking about these issues.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone wants them to continue and not be addressed. So part of that is we've got to talk about it, we've got to raise it, we've got to resource it, and we've got to have difficult conversations. You know, to say, well, you know, this is, it's not okay, it's not acceptable.
No.
It doesn't matter what sort of violence it is. What sort of family violence, you know, violence against women, violence against the LGBTI community, you know, race-based, culture-based, religious-based violence, it's not okay.
No.
We've got to have those difficult discussions.
But we've also got to help the broader community understand what, for example, violence looks like in certain communities. So, for example, in the LGBTIQ communities, for example, violence may not look the same way as it does in a heterosexual context. And I know Russell Vickery, who's our LGBTIQ representative on the Victim Survivor Advisory Council, put this, and I hope he wouldn't mind me repeating it, I don't think he would, but put this really well to me in the first VSAC meeting that I attended, where he said, you know, being in a relationship where violence was occurring, it was really hard to kind of make people understand that what was happening between he and his partner was violence. And he said, because to others it just looked like two blokes having a biffo, you know, yes, like not family violence. It wasn't being... So helping our service sector understand that was really important.
Really important.
We've had Russell on this show a couple of times, actually, and he's talked about his personal experience and personal journey. It's very powerful.
Mm.
So we're nearly out of time. I'd ask you to encapsulate what this means for you, you know, as a member of Parliament, as a minister. What does it mean for the Victorian community? What are you going to hang your hat on?
In terms of family violence reform or this particular aspect of it?
All of it.
Yeah. For me, the women's portfolio and the prevention of family violence portfolio is all a part of a continuum of something that's so integral and central to people's enjoyment of our community life, but also of our progress as a community. So for me, it's an equality question, whether it be about women's equality or whether it be about ensuring that voices of intersectional communities within our broader community are heard and listened to and their needs dealt with. It's ultimately all an equality question. And we can't truly call ourselves a progressive state until we're all moving forward at the same pace and we're all experiencing our service system and, you know, in the same way with the same benefits and all given the same quality of life. So
irrespective
for me,
of your gender, your ability, your sexuality, your age, your faith.
Absolutely. And, you know, human beings are wonderful. We are actually quite flexible. We can, you know, we can and we're malleable in terms of being able to understand each other's situation, I think, and circumstances and what makes each other different. I think on an interpersonal basis we can do that. It's about making that apply in our system so our system can respond that way as well.
Gabrielle, thank you for your time this morning. It's been great to have you back in the studio. Great to see the work.
Thank you.
We've been following the work of the Royal Commission very closely. We had previous Women's Affairs Ministers and with your responsibility in the studio who talked to us about the work. So it's great to see this sort of unfold and sort of get rolled out and embedded, as you said, into our service system and into our culture.
That's right, and it will continue to be a focus. I suppose that's the key message here. This isn't a flash in the hand, a quick investment, and it's fixed and move on. This is ongoing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.